Go into any toy store, and there you will find Barney the Dinosaur. Turn on the cartoon channel, and there's Fred Flintstone with his pet dinosaur, Dino. Flip on the radio, and you can listen to a song about Allie Oop riding on his dinosaur. It seems like dinosaurs are everywhere, from advertising to canned spaghetti. Many Christians are confused when it comes to discussions surrounding these magnificent creatures, even doubting their very existence. They have been so indoctrinated with evolutionary dogma that they cannot resolve the biblical record with what they are told by the scientific community. What does the scientific community tell us? We are told that the dinosaurs lived between 225 million and 65 million years ago. We are told that the fossil record shows that they evolved from amphibian-like creatures and that they in turn have evolved into the bird. We are told that it is ludicrous to believe that man and the dinosaur could be contemporaries. What are we to believe? The biblical record provides the Christian with an age for the earth of about 6,000 years. This is attained through close examination of the genealogies found throughout the Old Testament. But even though these genealogies provide for a specific amount of time, some would contend that the earth went through periods of vast ages during God's creation. They cite the first 6 days of creation as being unlimited in the amount of time for each day. They say that each day actually represents an age or period of the earth's history. This is simply not the case. The Christian has but to turn to Exodus 20:11 to answer these critics. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. By comparing the days of the week with the days of creation, Moses plainly shows that 24-hour periods are under consideration, not long geologic ages. The Christian's response to the atheist and the evolutionist must be logically presented within the framework of good science and proper biblical interpretation. This can only be attained through diligent study of the scriptures with proper application of scientific evidence. This is true when studying about the biblical record and dinosaurs. The early 1800s saw an explosion of interest in dinosaurs. In the spring of 1822, British physician Gideon Mantell and his wife found the first teeth of a creature that would later be known as Iguanodon. During the 1830s, more fossil evidence, fossils are the remains of animals and plants which are preserved in rocks, was found of a creature called Megalosaurus. These fossils subsequently led the British anatomist Richard Owen to declare that a group of large reptile-like animals once roamed the British landscape in the far distant past. He called these animals dinosaurs, from the Greek words dinos and sauros, which he translated fearfully great lizards. These animals varied from the terrifying Tyrannosaurus rex, terrible lizard king, which stood over 3 stories tall and weighed up to 7 tons, to the triceratops, or three-horned face, which was over 30 feet long and weighed up to 5 tons. Some dinosaurs were herbivores, plant eaters. Some were carnivores, meat eaters, and others were everything in between. They lived on land, in the ocean, and flew in the skies. They ranged in size from that of a chicken to over 5 stories in height. Unlike other animals, dinosaurs continue to grow throughout their lives. This interest in dinosaurs quickly entered the United States with schoolmasters O.W. Lucas and Arthur Lakes finding substantial dinosaur fossil areas in different locations in Colorado. These finds sparked the rush of dinosaur hunters into different parts of the West, which has not abated to this day. Interested people can view dinosaur remains in various locations across the country, such as Dinosaur National Park in Utah and the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. Also, many universities have very good dinosaur fossil collections. The Bible student must now look to the scriptures for evidence of the dinosaur. The book of Genesis provides us with insight into the creation of aquatic, avian, and land-dwelling animals. On the 5th day of the creation week, God made the sea dwellers and the birds. Genesis chapter 1 verse 21 says, "And God created great whales and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good. On the sixth day he made the land-dwelling animals. Genesis chapter 1, verses 24 through 25, read, And God said, Let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, and beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. These two passages include all animals from fish, whales, elephants, insects, birds, and dinosaurs. They are meant to be all-inclusive by saying everything. The Christian then accepts that all of creation was completed in six literal days, and after that there was no further creation. In Colossians chapter 1, verse 16 we read, For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created by him and for him. The Apostle Paul speaks in the past tense when discussing the creation. This clarifies any difficulty that others might have concerning any creating occurring after the original 6 days. But the Bible has much more to say about dinosaurs, although it never calls them by their man-made term. Because there is no reference to the law of Moses, and the fact that God speaks directly with him, as he did with other men in the patriarchal age, the book of Job is accepted as the oldest book in the Bible. Filled with many interesting scientific questions, God asks Job about things that are evident around him. In Job's chapter 40 and 41, he asks him about two specific animals. In chapter 40, beginning verse 15 through 24, we read, Behold now Behemoth, which I made with thee. He eateth grass as an ox. Lo now, his strength is in his loins, and his force is in the navel of his belly. He moved his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his stones are wrapped together. His bones are as strong pieces of brass. His bones are like bars of iron. He is the chief of the ways of God. He that made him can surely make his sword to approach unto him. Surely the mountains bring him forth food, where all the beasts of the field play. He lieth under the shady trees, in the covert of the reed and fens. The shady trees cover him with their shadow. The willows of the brook compass him about. Behold, he drinketh up a river, and hasteneth not. He trusteth that he can draw up Jordan into his mouth. He taketh it with his eyes, his nose pierceth through snares. The first verse in this passage introduces us to a creature called Behemoth. Many commentators tell us that this is either the elephant or the hippopotamus, but the description given in verses 16 through 24 leads us to believe quite differently. Verses 16 through 18 tell us that this animal is very strong, possessing many peculiar physical attributes. The one that catches our interest is the reference to its tail, where in verse 17 it is compared with a cedar. Under consideration is not some sapling, but the cedars of Lebanon, those mighty trees growing over 100 feet tall, which were used in the construction of the temple. This alone would tell us that this animal cannot be an elephant or a hippo. Their tails are about 3 feet long and about 4 inches in diameter. In verse 19, we are told that he is the chief of the ways of God. In other words, he is the largest of all of God's creation. Again, this cannot be talking about the hippo or elephant that are anywhere from 9 to 11 feet tall at the shoulder. Verse 20 tells us that Behemoth is so tall that he stands in the valley while he feeds in the mountains. Verses 21 and 22 tell us that this animal goes whenever and sleeps wherever he wants to. This again indicates an animal of immense proportions. Verse 23 tells us that this animal requires a substantial amount of food and water. Finally, in verse 24, we are told that he does not fear being captured by man. Elephants and hippos have been hunted for food and ivory for untold centuries. This is a description of an animal that will not be hunted and killed by man. If it is not a description of an elephant or a hippo, then the only other alternative is that it must be a dinosaur. The Brachiosaurus, with its long, heavy tail, long neck, immense bulk, and overall height, fits the description found here in Job. At over 34 feet tall, 74 feet long, and weighing almost 77 tons, this animal is one of the largest dinosaurs ever created. The Brachiosaurus spent its time eating the leaves from the top of the tallest trees. Job must have either seen or heard about this animal, because God would not have queried him about something that he knew nothing about. This would indicate that Job and Behemoth were contemporaries. We turn our attention to the next animal that God questioned Job about. In Job chapter 41, verses 1 through 34, we read, "Canst thou draw out Leviathan with an hook, or his tongue with a cord which thou lettest down? Canst thou put an hook into his nose, or bore his jaw through with a thorn? Will he speak many supplications unto thee? Will he speak soft words unto thee? Will he make a covenant with thee? Wilt thou take him for a servant forever? Wilt thou play with him as with a bird, or wilt thou bind him for thy maidens? Shall the companions make a banquet of him? Shall they part him among the merchants? Canst thou fill his skin with barbed irons, or his head with fish spears? Lay thine hand upon him. Remember the battle. Do no more. Behold, the hope of him is in vain. Shall not one be cast down even at the sight of him? None is so fierce that dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand before me? Who hath prevented me that I should repay him? Whatsoever is under the whole heaven is mine. I will not conceal his parts, nor his power, nor his comely proportion. Who can discover the face of his garment, or who can come to him with his double bridle? Who can open the doors of his face? His teeth are terrible round about. His scales are his pride, shut up together as with a close seal. One is so near to another that no air can come between them. They are joined one to another. They stick together. They cannot be sundered. By his sneezings a light doth shine, and his eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. Out of his mouth go burning lamps, and sparks of fire leap out. Out of his nostrils goeth smoke, as out of a seething pot or cauldron. His breath kindleth coals, and a flame goeth out of his mouth. In his neck remaineth strength, and sorrow is turned into joy before him. The flakes of his flesh are joined together. They are firm in themselves. They cannot be moved. His heart is as firm as a stone, yea, as hard as a piece of the nether millstone. When he raiseth up himself, the mighty are afraid. By reason of breakings they purify themselves. The sword of him that layeth at him cannot hold, the spear, the dart, nor the habergeon. He esteemeth iron as straw, and brass as rotten wood. The arrow cannot make him flee. Sling stones are turned with him into stubble. Darts are counted as stubble. He laugheth at the shaking of his spear. Sharp stones are under him. He spreadeth sharp pointed things upon the mire. He maketh the deep to boil like a pot. He maketh the sea like a pot of ointment. He maketh a path to shine after him. One would think the deep to be hoary. Upon earth there is not his like, who is made without fear. He beholdeth all high things. He is a king over all the children of pride." Again, verse 1 tells us that the animal in question is called Leviathan, a name often equated to the crocodile. The scriptures that follow verse 1, though, are not descriptive of the crocodile, but of some other creature much more terrible. Verses 1 through 7 are interesting in that God seems to be facetious with Job. These questions seem to intend that the things proposed could not happen. In verse 1, he implies that this animal cannot be caught with a simple hook or line. Verse 2 further states that this animal cannot be carried like a freshly caught fish. Verses 3 and 4 point out that this animal will not beg or bargain for his life. Verse 5 says he cannot be made a pet or be put in a zoo. Verse 7 then asks if he can be killed with a spear, implying that he can't. Does this sound like it is talking about a crocodile? Of course not. If we want to see a crocodile, we can go to the zoo, and Tarzan used to kill huge ones every Saturday morning with a knife. Verse 8 tells Job that if you try to take him, all that you will have left is a memory. Verse 9 goes so far to say that he is so fierce that when he is seen, he will cause many to faint. In verse 10, Job is reminded that God created this being which cannot be taken by man, and only he can destroy it. How is it that man can think to overcome God if he cannot overcome one of his creations? Verses 18 through 21 provide us with some other interesting descriptions. This animal is said to be able to breathe fire. That he is able to ignite coals with his breath is not beyond the realm of science. The bombardier beetle can, when attacked, spew a chemical concoction of hydrogen peroxide and hydrogen guanine at a temperature of 212 degrees Fahrenheit, the temperature at which water boils. Verse 25 points out how terrifying this creature is. When he raises up, the mighty are afraid. These people are so afraid that they relieve themselves. Verse 30 tells us that this animal has scales on his belly, unlike a crocodile's, which is soft and vulnerable. Verses 31 and 32 point out that this creature is very large, so large that when he moves in the sea, it's as if the sea is white instead of aqua in color. Notice the reference to the leaving of a path behind it. This same thing can be noticed behind a large seagoing vessel. As it moves across the ocean, it leaves a wake behind it which can be clearly seen for several hundred feet. In fact, it appears as if it is shining. This implies that the Leviathan is as big as some seagoing vessels. These verses are obviously talking about a dinosaur, but which one? Two different groups seem to have some of the characteristics that we have just read about. Scientists have long been baffled by a cavity located at the top of the head of the dinosaur called Parasaurolophus. This cavity is not connected to anything that has to do with breathing. Could it have been used to produce a chemical reaction for defense like the bombardier beetle? The other animal which might fit this description is called a plesiosaur. These animals could grow up to 50 feet long and weigh as much as 10 tons. They were sleek and agile hunters that spent their entire lives in the ocean. They looked similar to a brontosaurus having fins instead of legs. No matter which dinosaur it is, the fact remains that dinosaurs and men lived together. Job seems to have been an eyewitness to this. Other evidence for the existence of man and dinosaurs as contemporaries can be found outside of the Bible. These anomalies, as they are called, often provide the evolutionist with insurmountable obstacles. By showing that dinosaurs and man lived as contemporaries, we are able to provide the evolutionist with evidence that the earth is not millions or billions of years old, but is instead very young. In the late 1800s, Dr. Samuel Hubbard of the Oakland, California Museum of Natural History left Oakland for the Havasupai Indian Reservation in Arizona. In a canyon located south of the Grand Canyon, he investigated ancient Indian dwellings. High up on the canyon wall, he came across pictographs, drawings which are carved into the weathered rock, of an ibex, which is related to the mountain goat, horses, deer, birds, and a dinosaur. Dr. Hubbard said about the dinosaur pictograph, "Taken all in all, the proportions are good." He further went on to say that it is depicted in the attitude of which man would be most likely to see it, reared on its hind legs, balancing with the long tail, either feeding or in a fighting position, possibly defending itself against a party of men. In fact, the pictograph looks very similar to a Tyrannosaurus rex. How did the Indians know so much about the dinosaur if they had never seen one? In the early part of this century, many expeditions were made to the interior of the Congo in Africa, which were looking for a creature called Mokele Mumbe. This creature was first mentioned in reports made in 1913 by a German expedition headed by Captain Stein zu Lossnitz. They collected several native reports describing in a very large water beast which inhabited the Ubangi, Sanga, and Ikelamba rivers. It was described as having a long, very flexible neck, a very large body, and a long tail. Many other subsequent reports have been made about this animal in Cameroon, Zambia, and in Zimbabwe. Dr. Carl P. N. Schuker writes of an eyewitness account made in the 1960s by a 17-year-old hunter. Without warning, the waters parted, and a huge animal surfaced, beginning with an extremely long, slender neck and well-delineated head, followed by a very bulky, elephantine body rising up on four massive legs, and finally revealing a lengthy, tapering tail. The natives were shown pictures of elephants and hippopotami, and each time they said it was something totally different. When showed pictures of an apatosaurus, they immediately identified it as Mokele Mumbe. On April 25, 1977, a Japanese trawler fishing off the east coast of New Zealand caught in their net a huge animal that appeared to have been dead for about a month. This foul-smelling animal was pulled from a depth of 900 feet and placed on board the ship. It was measured 32 feet long, weighed 2 tons, photographed, and had a piece of its flipper removed for examination. The captain then had the corpse thrown overboard because he feared it would contaminate his cargo of fresh fish. Close examination of the photographs reveal an animal with a long head, long tail, rotund body, and flippers. Examination of the putrid flesh revealed an animal that was not a shark, whale, or fish, but a reptile. So convinced were the Japanese scientists that this animal was a dinosaur, a plesiosaur to be exact, that they convinced the government to issue a stamp in its honor. Historical references to fire-breathing dragons are found in many different civilizations, such as the Chinese and Assyrians. The Maya and Aztec worshipped a feathered serpent or dragon. Many other societies have legends about dragons or dragon-like creatures. The World Book Encyclopedia states that the dragons of legend are strangely like actual creatures that lived in the past. They are much like the great reptiles, dinosaurs, which inhabited the earth long before man is supposed to have appeared on earth. How could they have these legends if some man or woman had not first seen them? They could not. The only other alternative is that the biblical record is true. There have been discoveries of dinosaur tracks and human footprints existing in the same layer of rock. Recent discoveries in Russia declare that they have found more than 2,000 dinosaur footprints alongside tracks resembling human footprints. These types of things have been also reported in Texas and Arizona. Extra-biblical evidence confirms what the Bible has already revealed. Man and dinosaurs lived at the same time and often in the same locality. If, as we contend, there were dinosaurs living on the earth from the beginning of creation, what happened to them? The fossil record reveals that most of the dinosaurs died in the flood. The evidence for a worldwide or global flood which caused the massive fossil bed found throughout the world is overwhelming. These fossils were created when animals and plants were quickly covered by sediment and sealed from bacteria and decay. The only way for so many fossils to exist is that they were deposited during a global catastrophe. This is also true of the massive amounts of dinosaur skeletons that are found in places such as Alberta, Canada, and the Gobi Desert in China. If this is so, then some of the dinosaurs were on the ark. In Genesis chapter 7, verses 7 through 8, we read, "And Noah went in, and his sons, and his wife, and his sons' wives with him, into the ark, because of waters of the flood, of clean beasts and of beasts that are not clean, and of fowls, and of everything that creepeth upon the earth. The everything of verse 8 means all land-dwelling animals, birds, and insects. This includes dinosaurs. Many will ask, how did Noah get all of these dinosaurs on the ark? The answer is really twofold. First, the total volume of the ark was such that it could easily carry one representative pair of each species of animals, with plenty of room for the six other pairs of clean animals, as well as food, living space for Noah and his family, and storage space for animal waste. Secondly, who said that these animals had to be full grown? It is quite possible that only small animals were taken into the ark, therefore minimizing space and supplies. Another important point for consideration is that there are only about 300 different species of dinosaurs, with great variation within each species. This is true of cows, horses, dogs, and cats. We see then that with only two of each species on the ark, there would have been a total of just 600 dinosaurs. But what happened to these animals? The difference between the pre-flood world and the post-flood world was so great that it probably affected these animals so that they could no longer survive. This new world may have caused problems in the food chain, in that there were changes in the types of prominent plant life which affected the herbivores and then the carnivorous dinosaurs. It is also quite possible that the vast climatic changes that occurred after the flood adversely affected the dinosaurs. Prior to the flood, the temperature ranges on the earth varied little, with a mean temperature of probably 75 degrees Fahrenheit. Daytime temperatures were probably slightly higher than those at night. After the flood, the temperature ranges differed drastically between the poles and the equator. Variation between the seasons and night and day could have affected the dinosaurs' metabolism and thereby upsetting their eating habits, mating times, and birthing periods. This climatic change may have caused certain diseases and bacteria to increase, resulting in the dinosaurs dying off due to an improper immunal response. It may have been a combination of these events that led to the demise of the dinosaur. The fact is that we do not know what happened to these animals. There are no fossils or eyewitness accounts to tell us of what happened. All we do know is that most of these dinosaurs are not living today. In conclusion, dinosaurs do not present a problem to the Christian, but the evidence that we have looked at does present a problem to the evolutionist. We have examined only a small portion of the data that is available for the Christian. Greater research must be done by Christian scientists and parents in order to educate our children to the lies that are propagated in our schools, television, and magazines. We must fight this problem which attacks the very foundation of our faith, God's Word. Mankind has continuously tried to discredit God and His work. This has brought about the atheistic dogma of evolution which permeates our society. Why does man continue to do this? The Apostle Paul explains in Romans chapter 1, verses 22 through 23, "Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds, and four-footed beasts, and creeping things." The evolutionist contends that man is ever evolving upward toward a higher being, toward becoming a god. This idea causes them to worship the creature instead of the Creator. Romans 1:25. They contend that we are no more than animals, and therefore can do as animals. Creationists contend that we were made in the image of God and therefore better than the animals. By this we have hope, where the atheist and evolutionist do not.